We actually think that management is probably only really useful for dealing with the EQ side. Like, how are you doing? Are you having problems in your family life? Are you having issues with other coworkers? That's really what a manager should be, not are you hitting your numbers, because all of those numbers are already documented and they're self-reported and they're built inside of the system. So it's the system that's the manager, not necessarily the manager.
Every single company competes in attracting and retaining the best talent in the world. The Better Monday podcast helps leaders, entrepreneurs, and other growth-minded people get up to full speed with a 360-degree view of happiness, work-life balance, and organizational responsibility. Our mission is to interview top professionals all around the world so that you will have a smoother path on your journey to a happier work life. Your host is Milla Heikkilä, and the podcast is sponsored by Sofocus. Hello, hello, and welcome back in case you are a returning listener. In case you are new to Better Monday podcast, I warmly welcome you as well. It's great to have you. In the last episode, me and Liam Martin talked about remote work and how does it differ from hybrid work. I didn't agree with everything Liam said, but I must add that I really learned tons of new things from him. Plus, he is a super nice person, and that's probably or partly why our conversation lasted longer than expected. In this second part of Liam's interview, we'll discuss about the pros and cons of remote work. I also asked Liam how companies could support their employees' work-life balance and happiness at work. I hope you like this episode, so let's dive in. Well, if you had to list three things that make remote work the best model of work, what would they be?
So I think the first one is obviously an async mindset, asynchronous management philosophy. The ability to be able to consume information when I choose is such an empowering component connected to remote work. Right now, there's a ton of emails in my inbox. There's a ton of what we like to call silent meetings that I have on Asana. So we literally write down the issues that we want to talk about in a meeting. We comment on them. And then if we actually come to a conclusion, we just conclude that ticket and we remove it off of our deck. So we only meet if there's an issue that we can't come to a conclusion on, which is, I think the last time we did a meeting, they're supposed to be weekly. This one instance that I can think about, I think we did a meeting 6 weeks ago. So if there's no issues in the queue, we don't do the meeting, which is so incredibly refreshing because I get 2 hours of my life back. So asynchronous is the biggest one. The second one is the freedom and flexibility to be able to go wherever I want. When it's not COVID, I travel 6 months out of the year. I've been able to go to countries and interact with people. That's enriched my life so much more than anyone that works inside of an office. And again, I can't speak too much to people inside of work that work inside of an office because I've personally never done it. But the ability to be able to go to Cairo as an example and just live in downtown Cairo for 3 months and interact with the people and engage myself, put myself inside of a culture like that while I'm still working and being able to have, you know, employment has been such a game changer for me. I think I'm such a more enriched person because I'm able to interact with a culture that's very, very different from mine. And I actually think that's the secret to world peace, is people that have different cultures being able to sit down and interact with each other. You just recognize, hey, everyone is almost exactly the same. And that's the biggest thing that remote work has been giving me outside of just the framework of asynchronous. And then I think probably a third would be, boy, the discipline to actually get work done. I actually think remote work, counterintuitively, is way more productive for me personally. And I have a lot of quantitative data to be able to back it up than an on-premise model. So when I have to sit in a meeting with people in which, like, maybe I'm only actively contributing for 5 minutes out of that 90-minute meeting, it's a real drain on my time and resources, and I can get a lot more done in a lot less time. And the vast majority of the time, if I'm really focused, I can spend 5 or 6 hours and get the same amount of work done than if I was in an office and I was working for 12 hours. So just that focus and productivity is probably the third biggest thing that I would put down.
Mm-hmm. And well, what about the like the negative parts or the negative side of remote work?
So lack of, it's very different building culture inside of a remote first organization in comparison to an on-premise organization. You know, when you can have pizza Fridays or pizza Thursdays and you can go out for drinks with your coworkers after the fact, you build some of that human context into your interactions that you don't necessarily get with remote. We do it through different ways. We have Oculus Fridays. So we have virtual reality Fridays and Friday afternoons, we all kind of jump on and we play cards together or we play video games together. And that gives us a little bit of that kind of unwind time. And it also gives you the ability to be able to see people in a nonverbal way. So I can see how someone's hands move, or I can see how they move in virtual reality. And I can kind of get a little bit of a different context. I can figure out how tall someone is in virtual reality because your height is in that world. We also do other things like there's a fantastic blog post that we put together on Mural, which is another remote first organization. And they did a 2-day retreat virtually. So they literally had everyone on Zoom and then they had their backgrounds turned into flight chairs. So like on a 747 or something like that. And then they had like boxed lunches sent to them like they would on a flight. And then they would land at their destination and they went to this beautiful quote unquote, like island out in the middle of the Caribbean somewhere with this hotel. And they all had this huge, huge process for being able to do it. And people loved it. And they said that actually it was more engaging than if they had actually gone on the physical event itself. So there are ways to be able to break this down, but fundamentally, unless you understand it, culture is definitely more difficult to be able to build inside of remote teams. The other part of it too is if you don't understand how to manage remote teams, they are inevitably going to be slower. I think there's a major disconnect right now between the management by presence mindset. So is your butt in a seat? Great. I know that you're quote unquote working. That's usually not the case the vast majority of the time. You'd be blown away at how many people are playing Candy Crush on their phones under their desk in comparison to actually getting work done. So this is the management by location type of mindset. And transitioning that over to a remote work mindset where maybe people shouldn't work a 9-to-5. Maybe they should actually work a 10 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning, because that's actually the most productive time for them to be able to do what they want to do throughout their workday. That's fine inside of our organization, but other companies have a real difficult time getting their heads around that. So that's another big issue. And then I would probably say a third one, and we'll just kind of, we might as well do three and three, is the ability to be able to have less strategic collaboration. So my business partner and I, it is more difficult for us to be able to really get into a room and deal with the ins and outs of trying to figure out what we're going to do over the quarter or what we're going to do over the next year. Where are we strategically going to go? That work is more difficult because it requires a little bit more human context than we can get through digital means. And with that, we still do meet in person. So just because remote teams are remote, it doesn't necessarily mean we don't meet in person. We just meet in really cool areas like Miami or Medellin in Colombia or Ubud in Bali. We just go to these really cool areas. We spend a week and we really work out all of our issues there, which is a little bit more expensive. But for the actual time savings that you have with working remotely, it's totally worth it. And the company gets to pay for these amazing trips that we do every year.
I was just about to ask, like, is the company paying for those trips?
Yes. Yeah, so yeah. we do a yearly retreat, and it's actually pretty fun. We end up boiling it down to three major cities, and we have all of our team members vote on what city we should go to and what we should be doing. And then we usually do about 3 to 4 days of work on the business, but then we usually also do about 3 to 4 days of just fun. And our company philosophy is we fly you in and we fly you out. We choose when you fly in and you choose when to fly out. So a lot of the times people just take it take advantage of that to be able to say, well, let's turn it into my yearly vacation, where I might just say, okay, well, before the pandemic, we were going to go to Mumbai, which I was really excited about. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do that, but hopefully post-pandemic, we can do that again, because it's just being able to, as I said, interact with cultures that are very alien to mine is an opportunity that very, very few people get. And I think it enriches not only myself as an individual, but it also enriches our company as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, when we think about employee happiness, do you have any tips on how could companies support this? How could companies support the work-life balance and happiness of their employees?
So I think when we talk about work-life balance in general, the biggest thing, particularly from a more remote perspective, is making sure that your team members have what I like to call a sacred space to work. So I have a workspace and I have a social space. The space I'm in right now is actually my walk-in closet, which just ended up being the best place for me to be able to run a small little office. So I don't have any clothes in here, but I do have a desk and a laptop and a computer. And I work from this space only for work. So if my wife wants to talk to me, she has to actually message me, or she has to knock on the door. It's literally that type of division. It's very Pavlovian. When I sit here, I am only doing work. If I got a Facebook message or someone messaged me on Instagram, I physically get up from this space, I leave this space, and I take it there. Because by dividing those two spaces, it allows for me to be hyper-productive when I'm in this space. It's almost like when you go to the gym, right? What's the only thing you're supposed to do at the gym? You're supposed to only work out. And the most successful people that go to the gym, they just work out at the gym. They don't use it as a social environment to be able to hang out with their friends and all that kind of stuff. I do the same thing with my workspace. So creating that sacred space is really important, even if that's quite literally just a chair that they sit on. That's their work chair. When they sit in there, talking about NLP, you know, you sit in that chair and now you enter your workspace. So that's one big one. And then I also think actually accountability is a really important component of remote work, and being able to make sure that the employee knows how are they actually measured inside of the organization. So making it crystal clear from the moment that you're hired, what are the targets that you need to hit? And they must be quantitative. They must be able to be measured, right? It must not be a 0-1. It must be an up and to the right type of measurement. I need more leads. I need more lines of code written. I need more customer support tickets answered. Whatever that metric might be. And then very clearly measuring against that weekly. So we have that inside of the organization. Every single team member in our company has a number that they must hit, and they're measured on it weekly. They have to report in on it. And if we have to let someone go, it's not a surprise for anyone, particularly the team member, because they're saying, well, yeah, you're right. I didn't hit my numbers. And we didn't clearly identify these, or we very clearly identified these targets, and I didn't hit these targets. And we both agreed that those were the targets to hit. So creating that form of accountability is super important, and measurement inside of remote first organizations. This is something that was really confusing to me when I started interacting with a lot more on-premise or like in-office environments, how many people don't actually have a target inside of their companies. But because we're remote, we've really always biased ourselves towards having these kind of quantitative targets because we don't have many managers inside of our companies. We actually think that management is probably only really useful for dealing with the EQ side. Like, how are you doing? Are you having problems in your family life? Are you having issues with other coworkers? That's really what a manager should be working on inside a remote first organization, not are you hitting your numbers, because all of those numbers are already documented and they're self-reported and they're built inside of the system. So it's the system that's the manager, not necessarily the manager. So creating that accountability, super important to be able to make sure that everyone is on the same page. And if you do have to let someone go, we have never had an instance in which someone has come to us and said, this is a complete surprise. Because if we're not hitting our numbers, it's very, very clear of what direction, you know, we need to go and what decisions we need to make.
Mm-hmm. Are you using some sort of a software to kind of measure all that? Like, do you have some common place where you write down all the targets and follow up them?
Yeah, so we use a couple tools. We use Time Doctor primarily to be able to track time against all of our targets. So how much time are we actually spending on building a new feature, as an example? I can tell you down to almost a dollar how much a new feature inside of our software company costs, because we've actually equated for all of that inside of Time Doctor. And then we can also measure against that who is actually doing it as productively as humanly possible. So is there an engineer that's able to get things done in half the amount of time? Why are they getting it done in half the amount of time? And then how can we figure out how to get that person to teach other people inside of the organization that level of efficiency? Then on top of that, we use Asana for breaking down a lot of the blockers connected to our targets. So let's say that someone needs to get 8,000 leads inside of the business per month. Well, that's a great measure. But what if, a perfect example, which I can give you a real world example, is we're implementing product analytics inside of our company, meaning basically analytics about our product itself. And we moved from AWS to Google Cloud quite recently. And we realized that we shouldn't have even started the product analytics project because we needed to actually transition from one cloud architecture to the other before we started the analytics project. So I had a personal rock of being able to gain 10 actionable insights from our product analytics tool. However, because another department created this issue that effectively blocked my project from moving forward, we realized that that wasn't a fair target. So basically, I shut down my target and then we were able to move to this other thing. And the way that we figure that out is through Asana. So we can figure out where all these conflicting issues kind of arise. And then the actual targets themselves are usually, and again, it's a pretty low-tech way, it's just through Google spreadsheets. It's literally just identifying those Google spreadsheets and then having our own data system push that those numbers directly into those different cells so that we can have projection over the long term. There's a lot of other tools that you can use to be able to do that, but we just love spreadsheets, even though it's a little bit of a low-tech solution.
Well, I'm still using Office Word, so Word document, so that's even lower tech.
Is the documentation and accountability. So the employee must be responsible for putting the information into the system so that they know it's their number. They're physically putting it in, not biweekly, not monthly, every week, so that you can actually figure out the data points and you can get a line of best fit of where are we going? Are we going in the right direction? Maybe we're not necessarily hitting our targets, but because of some extenuating circumstances connected to other blockers, we couldn't hit our target, but we are seeing how we could hit our target next quarter, as an example. These things all kind of work into it. It's not very black and white, the biggest thing is being able to make sure that you have that weekly cadence. So the employee is measuring that and is very, very clear about where we're going. Because if, again, anyone that you, if you have to have a situation in which you let someone go, the worst thing that you can do as a manager is, or the worst feedback that you can get as a manager is that that termination was a surprise from the employee. If the employee thought it was a surprise, you did not do your job as a manager.
Exactly. Well, you travel quite a lot, well, because you are running remote companies. So how do you take care of yourself and your own work-life balance?
Honestly, not too well. But, you know, I think I can give you a little bit. And again, that's probably, it depends. It's all relative. So one of the biggest ways that I serve my work-life balance is, as I said before, the ability to be able to travel 6 months out of the year really gives me such a unique component of freedom and autonomy inside of my life. The vast majority of people that live inside of an office that are on-premise workers, maybe they get a week or two of vacation per year. I'm not on vacation, but I am able to experience cultures that are completely different from my own. And I just work a 9-to-5 or a 10-to-6. And then when I get off work from the co-working space or the office that I've set up inside of that location, then, you know, if I'm in Tulum, I'll have tacos at night and I'll just be able to interact with that different type of culture. So that's really big for me in keeping work-life balance and keeping it focused. But outside of that, I actually think a lot of the work-life balance discussion for founders, the business owner, is really a fallacy. Every day I wake up is a choice to work. And the vast majority of people that work for another company don't have that choice. And I'm very, very happy that I am, that I do have the ability to make that choice every single day. But if I'm not waking up and going to work every day, then I should stop doing the work. So I think when we talk about work-life balance, it is, well, what is your passion? What do you love doing? I love doing my job. It is something that I would do for free. So I don't really see it as a division. It's just something that I love doing. I love being able to gain insights into work that no one on planet Earth has ever been able to gain insights into. This is something that really drives me as an individual. So for me, you know, there isn't much of a work-life balance, if I'm going to be completely honest with you, but it doesn't necessarily bother me because I'm doing what I love to do.
Good answer.
There's a really good point, actually. Tim Ferriss in the 4-Hour Workweek, one of his biggest defenses is, well, the 4-Hour Workweek is kind of a disingenuous title because he sees work, quote unquote, as things you don't want to do. So this man works 60, 70 hours a week on things that he likes to do, but he does 4 hours of things that he doesn't like to do. So you just need to get yourself to a place in which you love doing what you do. And then to me, forget about work-life balance. It's just fundamentally fun. I get up in the morning, I get to talk with people like you, as an example, every single day. This is a ton of fun. I do this for free. I do it for free.
All right. Hey, I still have one more question to ask. Name one thing that makes company a better employer than all the others.
Outside of having a remote work policy, I think that would probably be the biggest one right now in the current times. If you, PwC last week just announced that they're going remote forever. And then Deloitte, in response, 2 days later, responded that they're going remote forever because they were fearful that all of their Deloitte employees would switch to PwC. So we're starting to see all those dominoes fall in the large corporate America world, which is a very, very interesting place to be. So definitely making sure that you can not only have a remote work policy in place, but can also manage remote workers is probably one of the big critical ones. And then I'd say outside of that is making sure that your team members have the freedom and autonomy to do what they want to do. So, and I'm not talking about just letting anyone go free and clear and do, you know, not even check in with them for months on end. You have to check in with them. They have to have accountability. They have to have those targets, and those targets need to be reported on. But in terms of how they hit those targets, let them do it their own way. We've found that that's actually one of the best ways to be able to get real innovation inside of an organization, is to be a little bit open with regards to processes. So how do you actually achieve the goal is really up to you. But if you're achieving the goal better than others, I'd love to talk to you to figure out how I can disseminate that information to other team members. And that's what really gives people that feeling of freedom, the autonomy that really improves their personal workday.
Thank you, Liam. This was very, very interesting. And as said, well, Sophocus is a hybrid company, but of course, like, we as well have been thinking about these remote issues and like the thing that we talked about, traveling, for instance, to other countries with the taxation and such. So a lot of new information for me, at least, and I'm sure many of our listeners also got some new insights to remote work and hybrid work as well. So thank you for this conversation.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. I'm super grateful to Liam for his thoughts and insights he gave to me and to you guys, our listeners. I don't know about you, but I really learned a lot from our conversation. Liam really seems to know what he's doing, and I'm eager to see what his next targets and goals are going to be. In the following episode, I'll be interviewing Laura Gallagher, who works as a professional speaker, organizational psychologist, and executive coach. Laura has made a convincing career with NASA and the Walt Disney Company, so I suggest you keep yourself updated about the upcoming episode. In this episode, me and Laura will be talking about trust building and team cohesion in hybrid work, of course. Thanks for listening to the Better Monday podcast. I wish you have enjoyed these conversations so far. In case you want to hear more similar talks like this one, just click yourself to www.bettermonday.fi to subscribe. Have a better Monday. Ciao!